Let's go ahead and get started. I'd like to very quickly introduce our moderator for this last panel. This is Mary, you can't hear me, this is Mary Kelly, who is the director of our land, water, and wildlife program with Environmental Defense Fund. She also is vice president of our Rivers and Deltas team. She's done amazing work in the realm of environmental flows, water conservation, water policy in general, and she's going to lead us through this panel discussion. So welcome, Mary. Thank you.
Thank you all very much for coming today. It's a glorious afternoon out there, and we're going to send you out there with all kinds of great ideas about how to re-landscape your yard to be drought-proof. So take a look around the gardens before you go, because there's some great examples out there. We have a wonderful closing panel here today. We have former House Natural Resources Committee Chairman Robert Puente with us, and we're all in the room extremely sad that we have to say former chairman. We've all very much appreciated his service to protecting water resources in this state, and he's been just an exemplary champion of water conservation. But we know he'll be out there. We know he'll be out there working for us and with us in the private sector, and we look forward to having his advice and his help. Next to Chairman Puente is Jan Klein. Jan is from the lovely city of San Marcos, and we're really happy to have her today because she's going to give us a little bit of perspective on how the small and medium-sized cities really can take an active role in conservation, and more importantly, what challenges they face and how we might be able to help them. And then finally, we have Ken Kramer, not finally, but of course, finally we have Ken Kramer. What's a water conference without Ken Kramer, right? Ken is, as you all know, the director of the Lone Star chapter of the Sierra Club. Ken is nationally recognized for his expertise in water conservation. He bravely goes where no environmentalist likes to go, and that's over to the Texas Water Development Board, and effectively represents us on many water conservation task force. They like to have him over there, too. No. It's been a great partnership with the board and TCEQ on water conservation, and Ken has been our liaison on many occasions with both the board and TCEQ and, of course, the legislature on water conservation. So we welcome his perspectives. And for all of the panelists, I'm going to ask you to start with a couple of opening remarks, and then I've got a series of questions here, and then we'll save plenty of time for questions from you all out there. Chairman Puente, why don't we start with you, sir?
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you to the Environmental Defense Fund for asking me to speak and share some thoughts with y'all. And the first thing that I want to explain is in this brochure, you'll see I'm listed as a former state rep, but in the actual printout today, it just says state representative. And I didn't know it when I retired early. I resigned in February. The term doesn't end until January of 2009, that you can't just quit. Because constitutionally, the term extends for 2 years, so I'm still a state representative with no money, no health insurance from the state, but I still have the title for at least until my replacement takes over in May after a special election. And Mary Kelly was kind enough to say that some of you are sad that I'm leaving, but there's three people that are especially sad that I'm leaving, and that's Mary Kelly, Mr. Kramer over here, and Myron Hess. And the reason is that when they used to testify before environmental regulation and or natural resources, if it was a very controversial issue, 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, we were still taking testimony, they would be last. They would be 1, 2, 3 right after another. And so you got their perspective at 2 a.m. Right in an order. So no opportunity to talk about what everybody else talked from about noon all the way till 2 o'clock in the morning the next morning. So as chairman, I did put them sporadically throughout the day. They would be able to testify and present their views, not just at 2 o'clock in the morning. So I think that's why they kind of are sad to see me go. You know, water conservation obviously used to be an issue that was not, it wasn't that it was unpopular. Everybody supported it. Everybody liked it. Everybody thought it was a great idea, but nobody really did anything about it. And the extent of what people would do about it was essentially to try to educate third graders, fourth graders about turning off the faucet when they brush their teeth, encouraging their moms and dads to take shorter showers, hopefully together if they're still in love. But as you've seen through seminars like this, that it is a high-tech, high-growth, money-making opportunity for entrepreneurs out there that want to make money. And so water conservation has turned that corner, is now an issue that Republicans are filing water conservation bills. And two in particular that were filed during my term as chairman were a particular interest. Neither one passed, not because they were a bad idea, but because the legislation itself was so directed at one particular, not industry, but one particular company, that it essentially was unfair to pass. It wasn't good public policy to pass in that manner. But I anticipate and I hope that they'll be refiled because they did save water, and I'll explain them further as the questions go along, because I'm sure there'll be questions like that. But thank you again for the opportunity to be here and to share some thoughts with you all.
Hello. I want to thank the EDF for inviting me too. I must admit, when they first called and asked me to be on a panelist with these two gentlemen, I paused for a long time and I was like, are you sure you got the right person here? But anyway, I'm here to represent the smaller utility, medium utilities. City of San Marcos, for those of you that aren't familiar, is just, you know, down the road, right between San Antonio and Austin. We've got a population of a little bit over 50,000 people now. The water utility actually serves about 53,000. We've actually got customers outside of our city limits. And we've got about not quite 10,000 connections to our water system. So we've been growing quite a bit lately. The majority of those connections are residential. We've got a lot of apartment complexes, duplexes, triplexes, fourplexes. We're a college town, so we've got a lot of residential. Very little industrial. Obviously, there's, you know, commercial. We've also got a tourism industry, so we've got a lot of restaurants and hotels and that sort of thing as well. Also, our consumption, not surprisingly, is mostly residential, and that's where you really see the effects of the multifamily. Actually, about 40% of our total water consumption goes to the multifamily sector, and then about another 25% to the single family. So really, a lot of residential usage there in town. Outdoor usage, actually, I think from what we've calculated, we're at the lower end of the spectrum. We calculate about 25% outdoor usage. And then our gallons per capita per day actually has been quite low. Actually, last year we were at 111. It was a wet year, so that's not necessarily typical, but really we've been in the 120s, and our five-year average gallon per capita per day is about 122, which actually exceeds our 10-year target that we had set. So in our next conservation plan, which is due next year, we'll be revisiting those goals, obviously, and setting some new ones. We've got a lot of reasons to conserve in San Marcos, and I think we're fortunate in that we have a fairly environmental-minded community, probably because of our springs and our river. And that's obviously one of our reasons to conserve. Another is that because we're just growing really fast. Anything along the I-35 corridor is just booming right now. Also, like everybody else, we've got a limited supply. We actually get about 75% of our water from Canyon Lake. A lot of people don't know that. Even the residents don't realize that. Historically, we got it from the Edwards Aquifer, all of it. But now about 75% is surface water. So we've got several different water conservation programs, and it's a small program. I was hired in 2001 to do the water conservation program. So it's kind of a one-person show, but we do a lot of different things on a much smaller scale than the bigger cities, obviously. We've got rebate programs. We've been doing toilet rebates for a long time, the clothes washer rebates. We do a rain sensor rebate, And we've started, 2 years ago, we started doing the Caroma toilet distribution program. Like I said, a much smaller scale, but people have been very happy with that as well. We do education programs, school, public education. There's events. If any of you are going to be there Sunday, we've got an Earth Day celebration at Ocarina Springs. Websites, you know, newspaper ads, presentations to neighborhood associations, that sort of thing. Also ordinances. We've got ordinances, year-round ordinances against water waste, and then also time of day watering restrictions, that sort of stuff. A couple of years ago, probably the biggest thing that we've done recently is in 2006, we adopted irrigation system standards for new irrigation. And that just requires, you know, that the heads be placed back off of impervious surfaces and got to have a master valve and that kind of stuff. So those apply to new irrigation systems. We've also got, like all irrigation systems, even the old ones, have to have a rain sensor put in. We do audits, primarily, again, for the residential customers. I've been doing a whole lot of them for apartment complexes. I think they're finally, word is starting to get out that, you know, the savings from doing these things are just huge. We will offer our rebates for toilets to them, and then also just give them free shower heads and stuff. So when you calculate the savings for those, really impressive. So that's really starting to pick up. And there's so many old apartment complexes there, so that's really a good target audience. We do see some reclaimed water usage. We're kind of looking at expanding that a little bit. And one thing I'm kind of excited about is we're going to get, shortly, we're going to start our pilot project for the automatic meter reading system, which that's not necessarily a water conservation project, but I think that there are a lot of benefits water conservation-wise that you can get out of that. And then, of course, you know, rates. We've got high water rates, and I think that has probably helped us out a whole lot as well. So that's just a little background information on who we are and what we do.
Well, first of all, I do want to add my voice to that of Mary Kelly's in expressing my sadness that Robert Puente is not going to be back in the legislature next session or chairing the Natural Resource Committee. It's not just because he would give us a better slot on the testimony on the committee. I think it goes without saying that Robert Puente has been the champion legislator on water conservation in the Texas legislature for the past decade and more, and a lot of what we've talked about today in terms of some of the legislation that's passed that has set some requirements and sort of pushed Texas in a new direction of water conservation is due to Representative Puente, so I salute you for that and appreciate that. One of the things that Representative Puente did last session was to carry House Bill 4 and also Senate Bill 3, which put into place a lot of new water conservation provisions in Texas state law, one of which was to set up the Texas Water Conservation Advisory Council, which is an advisory council to the Water Development Board and other state officials on water conservation, and several of us are members of that council. And I think you'll be hearing a lot more about us and from us in the next few years. We're actually setting up a new website, which is not ready for prime time yet, but will be in the next few months. That will be a repository of information about water conservation as well as about the work of the council. So you'll be hearing more about that, and I think that will be another new service for the citizens of the state of Texas in promoting water conservation. Because we have a limited time, I just want to take my time for making some formal remarks, though, to focus on just one topic, which I'm not necessarily highlighting as the most important water conservation topic per se, but something we haven't talked about too much today, but it was mentioned by one of their earlier speakers, and I think it bears some focus of attention from the Advisory Council and the citizenry in the next few years. I'm sure all of you have heard the term water loss, which refers, generally speaking, I think, from a layperson's perspective to the water that is physically lost in a water distribution system in a utility from things like water main breaks and leaks, customer service line breaks and leaks and things like that. It actually may mean more things than just those physical losses of water because sometimes you find that in water systems that a lot of water is basically lost or can't be accounted for because sometimes it may be siphoned off by people who basically are tapping into a system or there may be other problems with the lack of precision metering, things like that. Back in, I guess it was the 2003 legislative session, one of the bills that passed was House Bill 3338, and that required retail public water suppliers, water utilities that provide potable water to perform an audit of their system at least every 5 years and report water loss to the Texas Water Development Board. And I think the first year in which that report was required was 2006, I believe, for 2005 data. And so we have the first set of pieces of information about water loss through these water audits. Of course, a lot of utilities have regularly performed water loss audits to determine their physical losses anyway, but not everybody has, and this was an attempt to make it more universal. I am sad to report that, according to the Water Development Board, only approximately half of the public water utilities in the state that were supposed to report their audit water loss data actually did so. And unfortunately, there's no real, as I understand it, enforcement mechanism to force them to do the audit and report the data, which is something that I think maybe the Advisory Council and others ought to look at a little more closely and see how we might improve that particular situation. The Water Development Board, though, contracted through their research and planning fund for an analysis of the water loss that was reported by those entities that did report. And I will say, in fairness, that of the approximate 50% of utilities that reported, that probably represents over 80% of the population of the state in terms of the population served. But so, as you might expect, it's probably, although I haven't looked closely at the list of people who have reported or not reported, it's probably more likely the smaller utilities that have been less likely to report. But one of the things that struck me, and there's a report which I assume is on the Water Development Board website. Mark Mathis is here from the Water Development Board and works in this area and can tell us further if it's available elsewhere. But the final report of this particular analysis that was done by a couple of consulting firms under a project with the Water Development Board had some interesting data. I just want to share a couple of statistics with you. The utilities who actually reported their total water loss for, I believe, the year 2005, and again, that includes physical losses as well as some other apparent water losses that may be due to lack of metering or whatever. And this is a range for a variety of reasons, but they reported total water loss of anywhere from 212,000 acre-feet per year to 464,000 acre-feet per year, which by my calculation, I'm not very good at math, that's a hell of a lot of water. And if you just took an average gallons per capita per day of 150 gallons per capita per day, that would be equivalent to water volumes that could supply between 1.3 million and 2.7 million people. It seems to me that we need to take a little closer look at water loss and see how that factors in. I mean, it's more than just the water conservation issue. It's really looking at avoiding additional water supply cost by trying to better tap the water that you already have available. And it's probably going to be the case we're never going to do away with some water loss, but it does seem to be a fertile area to investigate further. And so that's why I want to bring it up. The Water Development Board has produced a water loss audit manual for Texas water utilities just last month, and that is available. I would encourage each of you to go back to your community if you're interested in pursuing this and find out if they actually did their water audit and reported data to the Water Development Board, and maybe we can up that 50% return rate next time.
Okay, that's a fun fact for the afternoon, and before you get out of the room, we'll have to have you have a quiz on what that number really was. Why don't I start with you, Chairman Puente? The first question I want to ask, and I'll direct the questions to each of you, but if you want to jump in, just feel free. Why, could you give us a little perspective on what have been the biggest obstacles in past sessions of the legislature to stronger policy action on water conservation, and how you think things might play out in the upcoming sessions, especially given rising energy costs and a little more awareness of climate change and a little bit maybe overall awareness of how important water conservation is to the future of the state?
I think initially water conservation was just a nice, fluffy topic, issue. It was great to do it. Don't let water run down the sidewalk, stuff like that. But nothing was really done about it, and it just started by attempting to educate people about water conservation, which is always the key and always should be done, but that's the only thing that was done. And I think it was so easy for individuals to take that in but do nothing about it. Just, yeah, I should. I should also lose weight. I should also do all this and all that. And so that's what it was for a while. Legislatively, Carol Baker and I started with doing things that we thought were very good ideas, and they were. None of them passed legislatively, but I think it started the process. Things like the toilet bill, low-flow toilets kind of thing, shower heads, washing machines, the way restaurants use the sprayers to clean their dishes. All these little things that save a tiny bit of water in the big scope of things is what we tried to do. But private industry was always there. I don't know if there's any water lobbyist out there in Texas. Back then, there sure wasn't, except for maybe Carol. And that's not really her title, although that's what she was. Versus water lobbyists for Maytag, lobbyists for any private industry that was going to be affected by what we were trying to do. And so the bills invariably would not pass, and they would just serve to have debate on, and then they would go away. So legislatively, I became chairman and had a little better control over those issues, and some of them finally did become legislation. For example, that restaurant bill I was talking about, that one did pass. Irrigation bills for irrigators, those passed. And so I think it was just a progression to where we are now. And as I mentioned earlier, where we are now, finally, people are recognizing that it's cost-effective to save water. And not just for municipal utilities, not just for big industries that use a lot of water, but for outside third parties that want to do it and make money doing it. So I think we're going to see, hopefully next session, continued water conservation bills. They will have a little bit of a dark side in them, because you have to be careful whether or not they're too industry friendly and it's just a mask for just one particular company or industry to make money. But I think we're on the road, and we're doing very well on it, and we just need to continue to push and be vigilant on it.
And is it sort of your sense that the cost-effectiveness argument is going to be increasingly persuasive, or legislators will be increasingly open to that?
Yes. Everything from the inability to do interbasin transfers, where cities and growing industry had to look at groundwater more than they used to look at surface water, and then, of course, the irrigation community, the agricultural farming irrigation community, knowing that they had the water, they had the opportunity to sell that water. There's a market there for that water, and so the cities know that there's a limited supply, that they need to conserve, and that there's money conserving. There's money to be made conserving. There's money not to have to be spent conserving.
Jan, let me ask you a little bit as a water conservation coordinator and a staff of yourself in a booming city. What if the legislature could do one single thing for cities in your position to help you achieve greater water conservation? What would that be?
That's a real easy one. Money. I mean, a lot of people think that for a medium-sized utility, we're doing a lot of stuff, and wow, that's great, you know, they're doing just fine. But, you know, we're doing everything on a very, very small scale, and there's just so much more that could be done. I mean, every day I'm just like, oh, you know, I wish we could do this. It would be so great if we could expand this program or do this program. So there's a lot of stuff that still can be done, and I think a lot of that is dependent on funding. Now, obviously, some of that can be funded by the utility itself. I'm kind of lucky because we've got high rates. That's not necessarily because of conservation, but other things. But we've got the high rates that can, you know, sort of help us to do some of those things. But we could certainly do a whole lot more if we had a little bit of financial backing.
Do you think, Jan, that the cities would be open to something that was, I mean, it's the Texas legislature, so they don't like open-ended funding programs, but what about a competitive grants program where
just
the cities
real quickly,
in?
We don't even fund public education, so.
Right. He has to stop dreaming, is that what you're saying? Let's try to dream a little bit. What about some sort of competitive grants program or way to sort of not have a big handout program,
right,
or something that the
yeah.
cities are really trying and really doing a good job.
Well, I mean, I think you have to limit it in some way, and you have to make sure that whoever gets the funding is actually going to use it and is going to use it wisely. So, yeah, I think definitely some sort of a grant program would be perfect. But then again, if you have grants, there's a lot of those, I mean, you know, writing or applying for grants is sometimes a complex and time-consuming process, too. So we need to be careful about that because that actually could rule out some of the even smaller mm-hmm. utilities. They may not have the staff or the time to do that. So, you know, that's another point with grants is you got to be a little careful with it.